Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. While Milwaukee may be considered the United States' most segregated city, our neighbors just south of us aren't too much better. Chicago is consistently ranked as one of the most segregated cities in the U.S., and much like Milwaukee, its history is rooted in government-sanctioned racism. A new book called The South Side looks at a myriad of things, both historically and currently, which contribute to the ongoing state of segregation.
The South Side is not just a portrait of Chicago and American segregation, as the subtitle states. It's also a portrait of its author, Natalie Moore, whose family has been living in the city for more than a century.
Moore was born and raised in the city, where she continues to live and work as the South Side reporter at Chicago's NPR affiliate, WBEZ. In her book, she explores how segregation and racial inequity transformed Chicago communities and impacted the course of her life.
Moore spoke with former colleague at WBEZ Joy Powers and explains why she decided to frame this story with her own experience.
There have been so many books and studies about Chicago and its segregation. For the past 100 years, Chicago has been under a microscope. And a lot of that work is academic, it's scholarly, and it doesn't necessarily reach more of a mass audience. And I thought this would be a great way to make a personal story with research and citing and building upon the scholarship that's already been done. And one of the best compliments that I've been given is when people read the book and say, wow, like, I relate to this. I didn't know there was a name for it, but this was my experience. And getting people to understand that segregation is not self-selection, and getting people in the entire Chicago region to understand that how we live and the dividing lines have been purposeful and really designed by the federal government as well as by private industries such as banks and the real estate industry.
How long has your family actually lived in Chicago?
I learned through this process that my grandfather's aunt and grandmother actually came here before the Great Migration at the turn of the century. I have no idea why. They're no longer with us. So my grandfather came, I'm not sure exactly. He came when he was in high school, and he was born in 1911. And I can't do the math that quickly in my head. And then my mother's parents came after World War II.
So much of this book refers to housing, as you were just talking about, things that were really created by the federal government. And when we talk about racially restrictive covenants more specifically, for a lot of people, the story ends at the Fair Housing Act. They go, okay, well, everything was solved. But as your book points out, the end of the covenants wasn't necessarily the end of their impact. How did these regulations transform Chicago's South Side?
You're absolutely right. When covenants were struck down by the Supreme Court in 1948, that precipitated white flight. You had white neighborhoods in Chicago and in Milwaukee that turned from white to black very quickly. And those neighborhoods were able to turn because the federal government started building highways for people to live in these new suburbs, and loans often favored white families in those suburbs. So I always tell people that we talk about white flight in this vacuum, but white people and families had some place to go. And so that obviously had an impact on neighborhoods. And post the 1968 Fair Housing Act, there have been a number of policies that have enabled segregation. And that's also what I wanted to write about. You know, things like zoning, how suburbs keep affordable housing out, how low-income tax credits are distributed, how Section 8 is funded, how public housing is built, how public housing resources are allocated. So we can't look and say, oh, covenants are over. Oh, the Fair Housing Act, which, you know, it took so long for Congress to get passed. And also, it didn't really have the teeth that some other civil rights legislation had that we saw come out in the 1960s.
For Milwaukee, especially, the Fair Housing Act was really, it really didn't impact the city that much. As you said, like in Chicago, white flight happened. A lot of neighborhoods immediately turned from white to black as people were allowed to move. But other than that, not much changed. As you said, the Fair Housing Act didn't really have a lot of teeth. What did this mean for your family specifically, as a family who lived on the South Side?
My parents bought a house in the black middle class neighborhood on the South Side called Chatham. And this is where they started their family. They had me, my younger brother, and sister. And it was a great neighborhood to grow up in. And just like Milwaukee, you know, I wanted to be very clear in saying that despite all of these things that have happened with segregation and leaving Black homeowners behind and facing discrimination and not as much home values, Black neighborhoods still have a lot to give families and communities. These aren't bad spaces, and the people who live there are not bad. But Black home ownership has a lot of pitfalls because of the way the system is set up. Black homes are not valued as much, and it's completely haphazard how appraisals work. And we've seen here how mortgage companies, banks give Black families predatory loans, even though they would qualify for a conventional loan. So we see that kind of discrimination as well. My parents lived there from 1974 until 1996, and they had always envisioned having a bigger home and moving to this integrated neighborhood also on the South Side called Beverly. And at the time, I was devastated. I was in college. They were leaving my childhood home. But given the market crash, given how homes in Black communities are devalued and undervalued, my parents have done much better financially by living in an integrated neighborhood. And as one scholar pointed out to me, she's not saying, okay, don't buy in Black neighborhoods. If you do, you need to find other ways to build wealth. This country has somewhere in its history decided that home ownership is the path to wealth building. And if you are buying in a Black neighborhood, you're just not going to get that same type of wealth building.
Well, and this is something that you experienced for yourself, with which you talk about in great detail in the book. You bought a condo in an up-and-coming neighborhood, Bronzeville, in Chicago, not to be confused with Milwaukee's Bronzeville. But up-and-coming never really came. You know, how did race impact the development of Bronzeville?
So Bronzeville is the historic Black Belt of Chicago. And this is the place where African Americans went after the Great Migration. This is where they were forced to live because it was illegal to live in other parts in the racially restrictive covenant. And even amid the segregation, there was a lot of, you know, arts and culture and blues and Gwendolyn Brooks, and Native Son was set in the Black Belt. And after the covenants were lifted, Black families also wanted to go into better housing. They didn't want to be in overcrowded conditions. And then massive high-rise public housing was built. And so that really destabilized the neighborhood. It became a very low-income community. And then in the 1990s, you saw a wave of Black professionals coming back in, rehabbing those gray stones. And then by 2008, people like me coming in and buying condos. And these were mostly African-Americans who were coming in. And we were told, conventional wisdom says, oh, well, race doesn't matter, right? If there's money, capitalism will flourish, commercialism will come. And that's not what happened. And there's a nascent area of research called retail redlining. And it shows that a lot of companies and businesses won't come into Black neighborhoods. And so that was part of the trouble. You know, my home, I put all my financial business in the book. I bought for $172,000. And by the time I was trying to sell, it had been appraised at $45,000. Now, mind you, this was a place that had stainless steel. It had three bedrooms. It had gated parking. And, you know, you can buy a car for $45,000.
What did that end up meaning for your life specifically?
Personally, it meant that I felt like a middle-class loser and that I didn't do better than my parents. And I lost money and didn't get to build wealth that way. And that was pretty crushing. I didn't buy the place to flip. I didn't buy it thinking, oh, this place is up and coming and in a few years I'm going to sell. I ended up leaving because I was getting married and we needed a bigger place for our blended family. And so it was devastating. It gave me some things to write about, and it gave me the opportunity to really dig into the forces around housing that are detrimental to African Americans.
Your story seems like one that we hear over and over again as we look back at the history of Chicago, where restrictive covenants, where different market forces have been incredibly detrimental to the black community. Now, you grew up in Chatham. What was that neighborhood like, compared to Bronzeville, compared to Beverly?
Bronzeville had, and I'm generalizing, it wasn't as family-oriented as I would say Chatham was. And Beverly is definitely family-oriented. It's an integrated neighborhood. That doesn't mean that it's a racial utopia. Chatham had a lot of strong black clubs. One thing that I've noticed in black neighborhoods in Chicago, whether they're low income or middle income, is that black clubs are a very big thing. And you know everyone on your block. And that type of cohesion taught me a lot about what it means to be a good neighbor. Speaking to neighbors, knowing your neighbors, coming together as neighbors to solve problems. My father was active in the broader neighborhood organization, and a lot of times my siblings and I were putting flyers for meetings in mailboxes around the community. There was a park that we went to a lot. I had a lot of friends in the neighborhood. This is where I learned how to ride my bike, where I had my first crushes, where I went to church, where I had Girl Scouts. So it's what you, I think, what most families want for their children. I did understand on a basic level that we had to leave our neighborhood for some amenities, but at the same time, we did have black-owned businesses in the neighborhood. Now, to be fair, this isn't a neighborhood that I considered moving into once I had my own family. I live now in Hyde Park on the south side, which is an integrated community. The University of Chicago is in the community, and so is President Obama's home.
To sort of switch gears here, I think it's hard to talk about Chicago without talking about violence, specifically gun violence. Now, something you bring up in the book, you have a lot of concerns about the way violence is covered, specifically by journalists. As a journalist yourself, what do you think of the way that people cover it more generally, and how do you cover it?
I'm still figuring these things out, but what I did do in the book is have a chapter called We Are Not Chirac. Chirac is a nickname that's in Chicago. Spike Lee also made a movie with that title, and it's a compound word of Chicago and Iraq, and was often used as a badge of honor. And so I pretty much rail against that, but I also did a study of media coverage from the two major newspapers over 40 years and looked at how violence was covered. Chicago has historically been a violent city. I found out in the 1920s, the Chicago Tribune had a murder hand clock on the front page. The city has always been more violent than its coastal cities. But violence is racialized. It's seen as, instead of a city problem, it's often framed as a problem that black and brown communities have to figure out on their own, as opposed to when there was violence in the 1920s here, particularly with white young immigrant males, that was seen as society's problem. It was seen as a problem that different entities around Chicago came together to try to fix, and settlement houses became one of those ways. I also think that often communities that are covered in the lens of violence, that's the only way that they are covered. And because we're so segregated, it leaves people with the impression that the South Side or the West Side of Chicago are just these big blobs of wild, wild west, black people shooting each other on corners, and that violence is a small part of what happens. Has a significant impact, no doubt, but these communities are filled with people who are doing very ordinary things, like going to work, going to school, taking the bus, taking care of their families, like other communities, like other people. But the violence just becomes this singular narrative about the black experience.
And that violent perception is something we also deal with here in Milwaukee, specifically on the north side, where these neighborhoods are portrayed as just, as you said, being kind of the wild, wild west. And when I was reading this book, it's of course called The South Side, but it could just as easily be called The North Side of Milwaukee. How much of this story, and even your family's story, has some universality to it, to the Black experience in urban cities throughout the country?
Well, the subtitle of the book talks about, you know, this is a portrait of Chicago and American segregation. And I think there are a lot of commonalities, particularly in the Midwest and the Northeast, that we see around housing and Black communities. And also this invisibility of Black working class and middle class neighborhoods. You know, we talk about the singular narrative of violence. And I think much of how Black, how America sees Blackness is either, you know, poverty, low income, violent on one side, and then exceptionalism on the other end, the Oprahs, the Obamas, the professional athletes. But there's a whole swath of Black that makes up Black America. And these are the people who are silently living and doing the work in their communities, whether it's the north side of Milwaukee or the south side of Chicago.
Well, Natalie, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and sharing your story here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Natalie Moore is the author of The South Side, A Portrait of Chicago and American Segregation. She is also the South Side reporter for Chicago's NPR affiliate, WBEZ. She spoke with her former colleague at WBEZ, Lake Effect producer Joy Powers.
Moore will be in Milwaukee this Sunday for an event at Boswell Book Company at 3 o'clock. More information is available at WUWM.com.